Welcome to Alternate Reality. This is episode 397, Comic Reviews.
Come on, baby, dry your eyes, wipe your tears. Never like to see you cry.
Alternate Reality is a podcast about comics, comic-related media, and comic-related merchandise. We do reviews of all sorts, TV, video games, movies, and comic issues. So be warned, the following show material contains spoilers. If you have not read your books, seen the movies, played the games, so forth and so on, then you may want to stop the show until you have done so, or you can proceed at your own caution. You have been warned.
I'm only human, of flesh and blood, I'm made.
Welcome to Alternate Reality, the comic book podcast. My name is John.
And I'm Charlie.
And we're here every week to talk to you about the very best thing in the world of comics. And we got a dynamite show lined up for you this week. We got a bunch of good books to talk about we think you guys are going to enjoy. We apologize for being out last week, but it's unavoidable. Hopefully we won't do that too much. We can be with you on a more regular basis going forward. Hopefully we got our editing and stuff lined out so we can do it in a more streamlined fashion, get it done quicker, and get back to the business of recording new shows. So that's the goal. That's what we're trying to accomplish. And we thank you for being patient with us. So we got a bunch of good stuff lined up for you tonight. We didn't get any email this week. I'm a little upset about that. We've got, of course, everybody may be saving their email for the 400th episode, which is coming up just shortly. And we're really excited about that. We're trying to think about maybe something different that we'd like to do for the 400th episode. If you have a suggestion, let us know.
According to Podomatic, we're on 409 or something.
Something like that. maybe we go record live somewhere. Maybe we have guests in. Maybe we do something different for episode 400.
Or maybe it's just the same old crap.
It could be. So, but
that's what I'm thinking it might be.
But at the very least, we want you to send us some emails and go, oh my gosh, congratulations on 400 episodes. So do that for us. That would be great. Send your emails to alternatereality podcast@gmail.com, all one word, no periods or hyphens or anything like that. alternatereality podcast@gmail.com. All right, so bunch of stuff. You have a good week reading comics, Charlie?
Yeah.
All right, good
Even
stuff.
Though I just read them today.
Well, okay, you're behind too.
While watching Inuyasha.
That's your new thing on Netflix you're watching now?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
I got to run through a bunch of anime this week before it
disappears off Netflix.
Which is sad because I've had Inuyasha on it for like 5 years.
It's one of those things like, oh yeah, I'm going to get around to watching that. What? They're taking it off?
I better get around to watching it.
All right, we'll be back in just a moment to talk about last week's comics. You guys sit tight. Alternate Reality, the comic book podcast.
Who disrupts my coronation?
Coronation, Starscream? This is bad comedy.
Megatron? Is that you?
Here's a hint.
Alternate Reality, the comic book podcast. We want you to check us out on the internet at arnetcast.podomatic.com. That's our home on the webs where you can listen to this episode as well as previous episodes that we've released in the last few weeks. You get caught up on what we've been talking about here at the Alternate Reality podcast and be ready for new shows coming up like episode 400. So you want to be ready for that by having all your Alternate Reality listening done up before you get there. So head over to the website and listen to us. We would appreciate that. All right, Charlie.
Yes.
You had the first book this week, yes. Jughead, The Hunger. You've talked about this before.
Yeah.
What is it about this that keeps bringing you back?
Well, I'm a werewolf guy.
This is number 8, like, by the way. I'm sorry, I didn't say that.
I'm always like, I like werewolves. They're my favorite monster. One of my favorite movies is like An American Werewolf in London.
Oddly enough, like, my son really loves werewolves, too. That's just weird.
And, Monster Squad.
Mm-hmm.
Wolfman's Got Nards.
Yes.
But that, I just like the...
The Howling.
The
it was a messed up movie. Yeah, it was a messed up movie.
Like, I like the second and third Howling better than I do the first one, which is odd because everyone says it just goes...
It's like werewolf orgy in those movies. It's crazy.
But Jughead the Hunger is written by Frank Thierry, who is a good friend of Mr. James Palmiotti.
Jimmy.
And the art is done... some of the art is done by Pat and Tim Kennedy and Joe Eisma. The inks are Rob Smith and Ryan Jampel. Well, this starts out, they're like doing a Salem witch hunt, right? And they're like, oh, goody. Goody
Jones. Salem witch hunt. Yay.
Yeah, good. Well, no, like, you know how like they called women back there goody, like person, like Goody Jones or as person. Well, they're like, Goody Jones, we know that you are a werewolf and blah, 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 and we're going to send you to death. And there's this whole big production, you see, and like she's like, well, you idiots, you don't know that there are like several of us and I'm not the only one. And they're like, haha, we did catch you. You are a werewolf. But
you admitted it.
Yeah. But it turns out it's all a TV reality news show, like Hard Copy or or Unsolved Mysteries or something like that. And this girl, she's a
or Rescue 911.
She's talking about the whole werewolves in Riverdale connection. Because in previously we found out that like Jughead had like rescued his sister Jellybean from these werewolves in the last arc. Well, this arc, the reporter here is talking about like, well, we know all about Hollywood's love story with werewolves and stuff. And like I said, they build it up as a really good like news, like one of those inside edition like news programs. But they turned out and they said, well, this is about the Riverdale Rippers.
Right.
Who they believe are Reggie Mantle and Veronica Jones. And they said, well, these kids have been going around in werewolf masks killing people. And they said, or are they real werewolves? You know, they don't know the whole story. But then they go, like, they find Betty and they try to interview her and, like, where Betty's family is a whole werewolf killer.
Right.
Like, they're like, Betty Cooper, we want to ask you a couple questions. She just turns around and she punches the cameraman. Like, punches him out, too, because this dude, like, goes to the ground because all you see is her walking away with, like, this dude's hand there. So she, like, totally knocks him out. Well, then they go and talk to Archie and Jughead.
Right.
And Jughead is the main werewolf of the story. That's why it's called Jughead the Hunger. And it's kind of funny. It's like, so Jughead, what about this? We know you and your sister are dealing with these werewolf people. And he's like, man, the only thing I could kill right now is a hamburger. And Archie, knowing the whole truth, he's like, shut up, man. Calm down. Like, he's just like knocking him down and like, would you shut the F up? Like,
shut up, Ted.
but he's like, so Mr. Jones, what do you think? And he's like, oh, I don't know. I'd just rather eat hamburgers than go on with it. Well, then the reporter turns into Hiram Lodge. And Hiram Lodge is Veronica's father. And he's trying to look for his daughter. And so they said, well, the most interesting part of this story is that instead of finding your daughter, you're also trying to buy this station. Why is that? And he goes, well, I'm doing it mostly to find my daughter, but you know, he's doing it to like kind of suppress the news and stuff.
Right.
So, but it's she's like, well, what's your family's why are you all on this like werewolf stuff? And he's like, well, my uncle, he was out one night. Now this is the best part. I thought he was with his girlfriend. And they're driving over a bridge and something goes in front of them and he accidentally jerks his car around.
Okay.
Well, what happens? His car goes into the drink.
Uh-huh.
But he's the only one who survives.
Okay.
So it turns into a Teddy Kennedy Chappaquiddick.
Yeah. All right.
Which I thought was really kind of funny. But Hiram Lodge, like, he's like, well, I'll find out the truth and whatever. And when I buy this, I'll send everything I can to that. And at the end, you see like Veronica, like after going, saying that, like, yeah, Dad, it's the news reporter just says, yes, we'll find the truth out later.
Sweet.
But I thought the whole Chappaquiddick thing was just, like, crazy.
All right. You know, it strikes me that the Archie setting, the world that, they created in Riverdale, lends itself to a lot of different type of applications of different comic book or movie style tropes. All right, so if you want to do a monster version of Archie, it's easy to do. You've got the characters there. You can hit somebody as
well. Well, the way they do it is it's kind of timeless because Archie has been in high school forever.
But it's like a palette, right, that you can apply different things to. And so, or if you want to do a spy story, you could put one of the kids as a spy, like Veronica, being Veronica, that's like a Russian name or something like that. Like she could be a Soviet spy. Like you could do a thousand different things. You could do somebody's a witch. You could do somebody's...
they do, the Sabrina book.
Right. And so...
it hardly comes out, but...
You know, they just, there's a lot of, you could do zombies, you could do superheroes, you could do
Life with Archie.
Yeah, you could do any number of things, and you could put it on this palette that already exists of the Riverdale scene, which is just a slice of Americana frozen in time.
Yeah.
And then you could apply all these different genre types to that.
Because they also have the Riverdale book, which is like the more adult teenage intrigue stuff, like
if you want to do an erotic version of
murders
it,
and stuff like that, and people sleeping around, and but yeah, it's just like I said, it's like caught in that place where he's been in high school forever, and
right,
these books, they just like, well, wonder if Archie had to fight zombies, or wonder if Jughead was a werewolf, and then what if Veronica was a vampire, and what if Sabrina was a witch during the 50s, which is really weird. I like that book too, but it hardly ever comes out. But they are doing the Netflix show coming out soon.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. That's different from the CW show.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think it's by the same people, but seeing on it's on Netflix, they can
they can be a little more adult.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Right. Because if you read the Sabrina book, it's pretty messed up.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Excellent.
Because they're like real witches, like real, like
you could do a homoerotic version of Archie.
Well, they have had a Archie meet like the Predator.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yes. Sweet. Not that kiss is fake, but I'm just saying, you know.
Other fake things like kiss.
But you get my point.
Yes, I get your point. All right, cool. Do you know what? The book I read last week that I thought was like, wow, this is the best thing I've read in a long time, was Batman Kings of Fear number one. What I like about this book, I can sum it up in this. It's like it marries three things. It marries Silver Age Batman with a little bit of Arkham City and that heavy metal, death metal Batman you've seen in that YouTube video where he's shaking his head.
Well, that's probably because the Kelly Jones artwork.
Yes, and so I love the Kelly Jones artwork. It is amazing, and it's amazing for a couple reasons.
Well, here's one thing about the Kelly Jones artwork. It's a Kelly Jones artwork, but it's not what he did during the whole time that he used to draw Batman, which is
really he did an epic run back in the day, but I never read any of that.
Because, like, he would, like, have chapter breaks and stuff where he'd, like, make little pictures of Batman, like, chasing ghosts or whatever.
Right.
But, like, it was interesting.
So,
but this was, like, the modern take on that.
Right.
Which I kind of liked.
So, the first thing I like about the Kelly Jones artwork, the story's by Scott Peterson. It's a pretty good story. But the Kelly Jones artwork is the thing that really shines. The first thing I like about it is Batman's costume here. Here we have, even though it's a darker blue, we have a dark blue-gray costume with yellow oval. And he's got trunks, and so I'm just naturally excited about that. I love that. The second thing I like about the Kelly Jones artwork is he makes Batman look scary. Because Batman is over-muscled, he's huge.
He's overly muscled.
And
he's scary. Do you have to imagine that if Batman was a thing, and if criminals were the superstitious and cowardly lot that they've been portrayed as all these years, that when Batman was on the scene, even though he might not actually be this big, he would feel this big to them.
Yeah.
He would be this scary to them. It would be like the boogeyman has, you know, Baba Yaga has come for you.
Baba Yaga.
And the way that Kelly Jones does it is there's no straight on confrontations in Bright Light. He sticks to the shadows. He reaches out of the shadows and grabs people. They turn around. This guy is pinned up and roped up on some, you know, scaffolding or something. And it's all the best parts of the Arkham fight system illustrated on the comic book page.
Well, another thing too is he's not overly dialogue heavy.
Exactly, because you know Batman's not doing a lot of talking.
Yeah.
Batman just swoops in. So this first scene I like is because the Joker's got a couple people hostage here, and he's talking to Batman, who's in the shadows. He knows he's there, and he goes, "Right now, you're formulating in your brain." I'm not doing my, you know, Joker impersonation. He said, "But right,
I was.
Right now, you're formulating in your brain how you plan to attack, how to take us down the easiest way without putting yourself or the hostage in too much danger." Oh, too late! And he slats the guy's throat.
Well, he goes, "I'm going to stay here until you come out, or I get bored."
Right.
And then, like 1 second later, he just
"I'm bored."
Pounds the guy and goes, "I'm bored."
And so now he forces Batman's hand because Batman, in an attempt to save this guy's life before he bleeds out, has to come and take down all these crooks. And he does in epic fashion. And apparently he gets to the guy and helps him choke off the blood supply, and he's trying to save his life. He captures the Joker, puts him in the Batmobile. The Joker's in the back seat talking to him all the time.
Which I kind of like because it's like the animated version of the Batmobile.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a shorter.
But yes, but it looks a lot like it. And so he's in there back in there talking to him, and he's talking to him about, you know, "You're crazy, but it's okay. I understand. I'm crazy too." And he's getting on Batman's nerves with the whole thing. So Batman puts on a gas mask and hits a button, and he just chokes the Joker out. And he takes him to Arkham. And while he's there, he drags him in, and he's got this orderly there, or doctor, I'm not sure who she is, and she's giving Batman all this grief about...
She's a nurse, like a new nurse.
And she's giving Batman all this grief about, you just run around, and you capture these guys, and you bring them back in. We're the ones that have to deal with them. You don't know what it is, and you don't even work here. Why do you get to just waltz in here like you own the place?
And most of these people are here because of you.
And, you know, most of these people are crazy and lunatic because of you, because of who you are, because they're trying to get to you and take you down. Well, about that time, like, all the cell doors in the place just, they all open. And so they're like, "Oh, my God, they're all out. The Joker and Killer Croc and Mr. Freeze and everybody's out." So Batman's like, "Stay here. I got this." And he runs down to where they're all at, and they're all waiting for him. And it's they've all ganged up on him, and you think, "Oh, there's nothing you can do now, Batman. We've got you outnumbered." He simply raises this little electronic device and goes and hits it, and it kills the lights. I don't know if it's a mini EMP or what it is. But suddenly, it's in the dark, and all you can see is Batman's eyes.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is epic, because if you were the Batman, this is the thing I always want. They did this some on the animated series, but other versions of Batman haven't done this enough. Batman is the boogeyman in the shadows. And in the dark, he cannot be beat. And he moves like silent death, man. He's just here 1 minute. He's over there 1 minute. Now he's behind you, and you didn't know it. And now he's come for you, and you're scared. And all he takes down every one of these comic book bad guys. He takes them all down. Mr. Freeze, the whole nine, Poison Ivy, the Penguin, the whole bunch. I mean, he beats them all senseless. And he's standing there triumphant over their pummeled bodies.
Yeah, I don't know. I think I like my version better, where it's a lot darker.
Your version is darker than mine. Yes, it is. Because I'm reading mine digitally on the iPad.
But the weird thing is, like, mine also has a printing error.
Oh, does it?
Like, right here.
Oh, okay.
Because it says Batman White Knight.
Oh, yeah.
In the where the alarm's going on.
Yeah, mine doesn't have that. Yeah, okay.
Which I think is kind of funny.
That may be worth some money, Charlie.
And I doubt it.
Yeah. Well, it could be.
Anyway.
So anyway, he finally comes back out there, and that woman's still giving him grief. "This is still all your fault, Batman, blah, 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 blah." And he was like, "Well, okay, I'm paraphrasing. I've got to go. I'm not going to stand here and be belittled by you." When suddenly goes, "We got a problem. Scarecrow is not in the pile of bodies. He's still on the loose." Batman's like, all right, fine. So he's running out. He runs out to the Batmobile, jumps across it, like just pole vaults across it, you know. And about that time gets laywayed by the Scarecrow, who hits him with the fear gas. And so now suddenly Batman, and the only thing I didn't like about this was that this whole story is probably going to be Batman taking some kind of mind trip while on fear gas. And we've seen that story before. So I don't know. I hope they do something different and not just have Batman be scared and have things jumping out of the dark at him and seeing his dead parents and crap like that. Because that's been done on any number of the Arkham City games that had the Scarecrow in it.
Next time, I'm fine with it.
So it just, I hope they mix it up and do something different. Like Batman, you think that's what's going to happen, but Batman has an antidote and he quickly takes it and then that's over and he does something else.
Right. Just depends on how they write the character. I mean, if they write the character from the early 90s when Kelly Jones was doing a lot of the books, yeah, that's how he would be. He would be like, oh, you thought I was under your drugs or whatever, and he wasn't the whole time.
Well, but the thing about Batman is that, at least from what I've noticed in the last however many years in the comic books, starting with the Court of Owls and coming up through now, is that Batman's been extremely vulnerable. He's been beat down. He's been hurt. He's been, you know, really, really at odds with the world. And he's not, and then being dumped by Catwoman is just the last straw, you know, and everything's gone against him. I want to see Batman that's powerful and triumphant and is
master of destiny. I don't know what this Batman is. If it's Rebirth Batman, then yeah, he's probably going to be fallible. But if it's pre-continuity Batman.
Well, it's like I said, if it feels like Silver Age Batman, he might be that one. That's what I want to read for a change, because I feel like we've had a lot of the Batman's getting his teeth kicked in one way or another. Like that episode right before the wedding issue, that issue where the Joker more or less beat Batman down. The Joker should never be able to beat Batman down, okay? The Joker, for all his planning, is a thinking villain. He plants bombs, he does things like that. He never outdoes Batman physically. And so I just, you know, this was really, really refreshing and palate cleansing to read. So I really enjoyed that. All right, Charlie, the other book that I liked, probably second best, you're getting ready to talk about, was JLA Dark number 2.
Yeah, JLA Dark number 2 is written by James Tynion IV. Alvaro Martinez Bueno does the art. Raul Fernandez does the inks. Brad Anderson does the colors. Rob Lay does the letter. This was pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
And I said it's pretty good because, like, where, like, last issue, I said I had the problem where it felt like it was way too talky. Like, they explained
every
different little thing in the book. Where this did not feel like that.
Well, maybe they got it out of the way.
Like, let's get rid of all the exposition in the last one and let's get to the action in this one. And I think that's what they did in this one. The crux of the story is that they're not finding any answers after they're beating all those dead, reanimated corpses of people who've been resurrected after they've went mutated, after all the magic stuff that happened to them. They make their way to Dr. Fate's watchtower.
Right. I love me some Dr. Fate. He's like the DC version of Dr. Strange, who I also love. I have a type.
But the sad thing is, it's like, Diana's never dealt with Dr. Fate directly.
Mm-hmm. He's teamed up with the JLA in the past on certain things, but yeah.
And Dr. Fate takes this attitude with her. Is like, look, I'll help you, but we gotta go. We can't let these plebes.
Yeah. These outsiders.
Which they're talking about, Detective Chimp and Man Bat.
Right. Who's in his human form now?
Well, yeah, because they were like during the fight, he went all man. He went bat.
Full on man bat. Yeah,
and like one of the best lines is like, I think Detective Chimp goes, "Yeah, can we find some D-man batification serum? Does anyone got any of that? Seriously, because we can't be lugging this dude around."
Yeah,
and so Detective Chimp and Man Bat are just hanging about in the lobby,
right,
of Fate's Tower. And it's funny because they say Fate's Tower is in like Baltimore, which I didn't know that. I was like,
right beside the Tree of Wonder, which when we read the No Justice miniseries, and they talked about the Tree of Wonder. They didn't say anything about it being right next to the Tower.
Well, it might have transplanted itself. But,
or it could be the Tower of Fate moves. I mean, you never know.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. It transplanted itself somewhere else. Which is funny because a Swamp Thing doesn't go in. He hangs out.
With the tree, because that's his peep.
Yeah. And he has a little, like, side-on conversation with Constantine.
Who's lurking.
Which is funny because, like, mostly anytime, like, you see Constantine Swamp Thing, that's what happens.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Swamp Thing will just be walking around, Constantine will just walk up to him, and they'll have a conversation.
Hey, you mossy mate, what's going on?
Hey, love. Hey, love. Because I like the guy who plays him on the
CW.
Yeah. But he's telling him, he's like, well, what's going on with you, dude? I know you're going to leave because you're going to go back to the Parliament of Trees. And Swamp Thing's like, I think I could do a lot more good. And Alec Holland is just a byproduct of what I am now. So I think if I like, if he goes to the Parliament of the Trees near the Tree of Wonder, I think he thinks he can switch back and forth from the Parliament.
Well, no, my understanding, I'm not saying you're wrong, but that's not what I got from it. What I got from it is the Parliament of Trees has sent him on one last great mission. If he successfully completes it, they'll let him take his place in the Parliament of Trees, and there'll be a new Swamp Thing. There'll be a new embodiment of the green. He'll basically retire, and there'll be a new Swamp Thing.
I don't know.
Because
I hope not.
Well, I don't, hopefully, please God, don't do that, DC. Don't give us a new young Swamp Thing that nobody cares about. Please don't do that.
Well, they've had every chance to, like, branch off the character.
He's here all week, folks.
But they've destroyed all that chance. But anyway, getting back to Diana, Dr. Fate, and Zatanna, it turns out that Kent Nelson, who is the bearer of the Helmet of Fate,
mm-hmm.
is not in control anymore.
Right.
It's Naboo.
Naboo is taken over.
And Naboo's like Zatanna, like,
there is no Dana, only Zul.
Only Naboo. But while that's going on and he's being taken over control, he starts telling about the Lords of Order.
Right. Gives a little backstory there. There is some exposition
yeah.
there.
But what I'm saying is it's not every page three
right. balloons. On it's not overdone.
And while that's going on, Man-Bat outside in the lobby, he finds this vase. And on this vase, he says, hey, look, there's a little kid waving at me on the vase. It's weird.
It's like the muses on the Hercules intro.
Yeah. But he does something to the vase. And out pops up Khalid, who was the bearer of Fate's helmet during the whole New 52 thing.
Mm-hmm.
Or I think it was either New 52 or when Rebirth first started. I think it might be Rebirth. But Khalid says, look, Kent Nelson is not Kent Nelson. It's Naboo. And he's the one who brought back these bad guys who are trying to get rid of magic.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's going on after Kent Nelson, Naboo, Dr. Fate tells them, he's like, yes, they've been bringing order. I'm bringing chaos. And they just start to battle. Great issue.
It was fantastic. That thing that's hanging upside down on the last page reminded me, especially since it was upside down, of the Demogorgon from Stranger Things.
Well, I think it was... I'm not real sure, but I think that might be one of Diana's people from the New 52 run.
Oh, really?
Like one of the, like, that may be, shoot, not Zeus.
One of the gods?
Yeah.
Apollo?
No. Who's?
Which one?
Runs the underground.
Oh, Hades?
It might be Hades.
Oh, that'd be weird.
Or it might not be. I don't know. But it was just like, that's creepy.
Could be Kratos.
Athena!
Anyway.
But it ended on like a like nasty horror image creature.
It was a very, very good issue. I really liked it. But I would like to know a little bit more about who this new bearer of Fate's helmet is that was in the vase. I don't know anything about him. And if he's not doing that anymore, when did Kent Nelson get back? And did Kent Nelson take it back from him?
No, he was teaching him how to use the helmet.
Okay.
So it's between that. Because, like, Naboo is kind of like one of those things, like, when you put the helmet on, you're basically Naboo's vessel.
Right. You're channeling
him. Yeah. So, I don't know, like, if, like, Naboo just decided to take over.
Completely,
but it's kind of weird. Like, it was, like, turning Naboo, who's been a hero for decades, into a villain.
Yeah.
I was like, whoa, it's weird.
All right, cool.
Might be gearing up for that whole DC Heroes in Crisis.
I thought that was more to do with like a psych ward or something. Anyway.
But like people are supposedly going to be dying in that.
Yeah, it's supposed to be an epic thing. I'm interested to see.
Like some of the characters that might be dying is Arsenal,
mm-hmm.
Kyle Rayner. Gee, I wonder who's going to die.
All of the mantle bearers from the 90s. Yeah, let's do that. Okay, cool. All right, Avengers number 6. This wraps up Ed McGuinness's run on this book. Jason Aaron will still be there. We assume. He may come back for another arc, but I doubt it. I think this 6 issues was Ed McGuinness's run, and he'll be off doing more covers and stuff now.
Maybe.
And so you probably got your Ed McGuinness fix for the next 3 years or however long, until he comes back on some other little project of some kind. But not to say that it wasn't a fun issue anyway. The thing that I like most about this issue, and this is just a kind of ancillary side thing, is the fact that even after it's all over, and even after Drunk Off Power Hulk and Thor and She-Hulk are done with the battle at the end of it, they're still making out. I was like, oh my God, like Thor and Savage She-Hulk may be a thing after this.
I doubt that.
That would be great. But anyway, so the artwork in this continues to be epic. Ed McGuinness is just amazing. Basically,
you know what the weird part about this was?
What?
Like, there were literally like 6 pages of like, the ebony blade starts bleeding.
Yes, there was this all these things around the
Marvel universe. Everyone was like, Odin like prepares for the final battle, blah, blah, blah.
And I was like, somewhere the Iron Fist can sense in his hand that things are about to be destroyed all across the cosmos.
And then at the end of the book, it was like, the Iron Fist like goes to sleep. Odin like congratulates everyone for a job well done.
Man-Thing slinks back into his
home. It was just like, all this build-up.
And nothing. So the Avengers do finally win the day against the
Finals. But I thought it was funny because, like, in the previous issue, we didn't talk about it. All the Avengers had, like, invaded the bodies of other Celestials, and they'd gotten huge.
Right. Well, Thor and She-Hulk had gained that power from that stuff they drank in Asgard. Yeah. So Robbie something. Robbie, the new Ghost Rider, the one that drives the car, he had made his new vessel one of the Celestial's bodies. So here's this Celestial walking around with fire coming off of it. And you know, you've got like giant Iron Man, because he's got one of his suits of armor is giant like that. In the meantime, you've got your lesser heroes. Not that they're lesser, but they're just not as big. You've got Doctor Strange, Black Panther, Captain Marvel, and Captain America are all fighting the bugs down below. Well, to make a long story short, the reason that the first host didn't come in and wipe everybody out was because they decided that the rot that was infested, that Celestial that died at the North Pole, would be a breeding ground for superheroes. It would create the toxic goo necessary for superpowered individuals to spring up out of it. And it did. That's why we have mutants. That's why we have the Fantastic Four. That's why we have Captain America. That's why we have, you know, all these people on this planet that have all got amazing powers and abilities. It's because the human body has the base elements in it to be superpowered. And that comes from that Celestial that died and left its remains, its rotting corpse here on the Earth all those millennia, hundreds of billions of years ago. Okay? Those bugs that were in that thing this pool created a natural antibody to those bugs, which is us.
Yeah.
And so basically, through something that Tony uses called the Unimind, which is a MacGuffin device that you just needed to not worry about.
Well, here's the thing, right? When he said Unimind, you know what I was thinking?
What?
Oh, Martian Manhunter, right?
Yeah.
Because this felt like they were just ripping off something that JLA does on a regular basis.
Right. Everybody in connected and thinking to each other.
But speaking of the Unimind thing, when he was describing it,
mm-hmm.
Carol says, oh my God, this isn't a sex joke, is it? And I was like, where did that come from?
Well,
she's it was just like so off the collar.
She's just used to that from Tony.
But like, he didn't even like say a joke or anything. It was just like, I swear to God, if this is some kind of sex joke, I personally put you back in your coma, which is, I was just like, that's a little weird.
So they use the Unimind to combine their powers, and it basically wipes the bug infestation out. So at this point, the bug infestation is wiped out, but they still have got the Celestials to deal with. And so they gather up, and they team up, and they fight them. And somehow or another, and it doesn't really explain how, it just, they overwhelm them and come against them and beat those Celestials. At the end of the day, Loki's laughing, and he goes, ha-ha, welcome back, Avengers, as if to say that Loki did all this not to take over the Earth, not to destroy humankind,
but to
get the Avengers back together.
Help them realize their full potential, and that's why I told you your whole backstory of why you're blah, 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 and da-da-da.
So it's good to know that you've got a villain that exists only to make you better. It's kind of like Professor Zoom in The Flash.
Yeah.
And so that's handy. Again, the only real reason, I love Jason Aaron as a writer, but this is not strong writing.
Yeah.
The only reason that this was worthy to be read was because of the Ed McGuinness artwork, which was phenomenal.
And that's why I said I'll probably stop reading after this.
Well, I'm a Jason Aaron fan, so now that the artwork's not the key feature of the book, I wonder what it'll be like going forward. So I may hang on a couple of issues, see what's going on. All right, Charlie.
Are you reading Thor?
Yes, and it's not particularly great. It's like Jason Aaron's kind of hit a dry spell right now. I don't know. It's kind of,
Which is weird because apparently he's going to be writing a new Conan book for Marvel.
I kind of want to read that too because it's right in his wheelhouse. It's like, okay.
I don't know.
All right, Charlie. Terrifics number 7.
We've talked about this before, and like one of the greatest parts about this book is right now is that not the fact that it's a DC take on Fantastic Four,
mm-hmm.
is the fact now that they have the Fantastic Four artist from the Hickman run, Dale Eaglesham.
Right.
So like Dale Eaglesham is now drawing the book, which makes it look beautiful. But at the beginning of the book, we have Tom Strong, and he's fighting one of his arch enemies named Savine. And Savine is in this big robot, and he's, like, trying to take over Millennium City. Well, he's like, well, you know who could stop this? Tom Strong. And Tom Strong comes in, and you find out that it's a comic book that this girl's reading.
Ah, okay.
But then there's this thing where Savine actually comes in suit of armor. And he's like, haha, you didn't know this, but like there were these like ghost-like beings that came through town a century ago, or what, 10 years ago, and I got their weaponry or whatever, and I can change everyone into like lifeless ghosts, like ghost-like beings.
Mm-hmm.
And Tom Strong comes in, he goes, Savine, you idiot. He goes, you don't realize this, but 10 years ago when those guys came in, I was the one who helped them assimilate to Earth's gravity, to Earth, because one of their men fell in love with one of our women, so I helped him become real. But seeing as you've planted this bomb, you've blown up this dirigible, because he comes in and like a Zeppelin.
Right.
Savine blows it up, and he's like, you unleashed the chemical that like reverts everyone back to normal. So I was like, that's pretty cool. But then when he goes back to his base, and he's trying to find out where his daughter is, because she's an adventurer, and she like calls in every few hours to make sure she's all right. And Tom's talking to his wife on the thing. She's like, honey, you don't understand. I haven't been able to reach our daughter, and I'm worried because something's happening. And all of a sudden, his Alfred Butler robot gets, attacked. And turns out it's that Dr. Dredd guy.
Mm.
And Dr. Dredd attacks Tom Strong. We don't know what happens.
Nothing but a cheap thing, baby. That's Dr. Dre, my bad.
But the
guy that looks like Doom.
The Terrifics come through and they decide what they got to do is they got to go find Tom Strong to help them because they think he's working with Mr. The Stag, the guy that turned Rex into Metamorpho.
Right.
He said, look, everything that's happened to us from the war wheel to Rex being taken over to us being zapped by all this thing, we think it's you doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And Stag's like, well, you have no proof it's me, blah, blah, blah. And it's funny because, his bodyguard comes in, he goes, yeah, there's this attack, and you did something, and, they decide that they need help from Tom Strong to find out what's going on.
Right.
So they travel to Millennium City, and they start to... The robot Newman is covered with this tree-like growth. And he's like, look, don't touch it. It's a trap or whatever. But by the time he does that, Plastic Man accidentally touches it and it grabs the whole team. And even the Phantom Girl, she can't even escape. So they all end up wherever Tom Strong is. And he's like, buddy, I hope you know what you're doing because we're stuck right now.
Sweet.
So
I never met a comic book character named Stag that was a good guy. Never. Well, especially if it's a last name, if it's Robert Stag or Steven Stag or Joseph Stag or whatever. Stag is a bad guy name. Just saying.
Kinda Robert Stag. Didn't he he voiced Ultra Magnus and hosted Unsolved Mysteries?
Oh yeah, it's true. He was an okay guy, but he's not a comic
Stag.
Oh, it's Robert Stag. Okay. Well, it sounded right.
Yeah, I was making the joke.
Okay. All right.
Ba-dum-bums.
All right, that brings us to the last book of the evening, Darth Vader number 20. These Darth Vader books continue to be strong, Charlie.
Yeah.
I'm enjoying these. And they've been teasing this Vader's Fortress for two or three issues now. And I keep wanting to know, when are we going to get to Vader's Fortress? Well, we get to the start of it here.
Well, it's not the fact that it's his fortress because he already has his fortress.
Well, I thought this was showing how he got his fortress.
I don't think so. I might be wrong. I don't know how, I don't know the timeline because
I think books, this is back a little bit in time. I think at this point, he doesn't have his fortress, his own personal fortress at this point. Right. That's my understanding. I could be wrong. We'll see how it goes. But, the book opens up with him coming to the headquarters of the Inquisitors. The Inquisitors is this, if you've been watching Star Trek Rebels on Disney XD, you know that the Inquisitors were tasked with hunting down what was left of the Jedi. And particularly any rebel, but particularly the Jedi rebels that maybe didn't get killed in Order 66, and hunting them down and eliminating them. And they're pretty good at what they do, but they're no match for Vader. And so Vader comes and says that there's two of the Inquisitors, which are traitors, and he's come to basically take them out. And so once he identifies them, then it's a full-on fight chase scene all through Coruscant.
Yeah, this is the most action I've ever seen Darth Vader, move in history.
Yeah, this was great. Because you think of Vader kind of as stiff,
yeah,
especially the way he moved in the movies with all that costume on.
Yeah.
He doesn't look like he's stiff at all in this book. I mean, he's jumping and he's leaping and he's doing things. I particularly like him standing on this speeder, riding through the middle of Coruscant in the air, and with his arms crossed, he's just a complete bad A, and he's fighting. They throw their lightsabers at him and cuts that speeder in half. He just jumps off, falling.
Well, the funny thing is when they do that, it shows the air speeder falling, and then it just shows these couple there just sitting
in the park,
all romantic. He's like, honey, I love you, blah blah blah, and then all of a sudden, boom!
The whole air explodes.
Because that speeder is just
crashed right on top of him. Right.
For no reason from what you think.
Yeah, it just seemed like random violence. Yeah. Random collateral damage.
I was reading it. I was like, Why would the what does this have to do with
it? Random collateral damage. Okay. And so they get on down the street and they're still fighting with Vader. They use their force powers to throw a speeder back at him in midair. Yeah. Vader, one hand force catches it and throws it back at them. It was amazing. They all finally come to a balcony, and both of the Inquisitors raise their sabers to strike him down. Vader just reaches up with the force and, like, controls them like puppets.
Force chokes them.
Well, and I don't know that he's choking them so much as he's just got them in still. Like, they're paralyzed. They can't move because he's taking control of their limbs.
Yeah, he gets them to...
And they look at each other, and the girl, because they were apparently a girl and a guy, they were in love.
Well, I think he was in love with her, and she never knew it. And he was telling her when they were escaping, he's like, yeah, we'll do this. We'll get away from Vader, and we'll be free, and we can be together.
Right. And so that's when Vader puts an end to it. So she looks at him. She goes, I'm sorry. He says, it's all right.
He goes, I told you we'd be free.
I don't think either one of us expected to die in bed, not after the choices we've made, but at least now we'll be free. And about that time, Vader causes them to force stab each other. Or forces the force to cause them to run each other through with their lightsabers. And the image of Vader, Vader's mask does not emote, but the look on Vader's face as he's making them stab each other just shows the sheer hatred on his face. And it's like, I love it when they use that mask and show it from different angles to make it look like he's making a face.
Yeah.
That is fantastic. It's just really good artwork. I mean, if you did it any worse, the brow would actually be scowling and coming down. But they do it here in such a way as to not do that, but they're lit. It's lit at an angle that makes it look like he's mad. So it was really good. All right, so that was just like the first half of the book. And you're like, well, that was over kind of quick, you know. But we're back at the Emperor's throne room, and the Emperor's chewing Vader out. He's like, why couldn't you take care of this quietly?
He's like, on my planet?
This is on my throne world? You see all the collateral damage? And apparently the people in the park was a senator and his wife. And I needed like a trade deal or something with them.
And then I was like, oh, that's why they showed those two people.
And so he's like really giving them a hard time. And then explains why he killed the Inquisitors. And Palpatine goes, oh. Well, good job. And he goes, what happened to the other Jedi that I sent you to kill? And this was an issue ago. And he goes, he was attempting to hide. He became a priest. And you just see the evil on Palpatine's face. He goes, ha! Them Jedi can't help themselves, can they? A priest.
And he goes, well, he might have just should have been just hiding as a Jedi.
Yeah.
Because he could have been the next best thing.
He could have been anything in the world, a smuggler, a murderer, anything like that. No, he hides as the next best thing to a Jedi. And he goes, a priest. And so he brings him into this hangar and he shows him a ship. He says, I'm going to give you this ship. Well, for anybody that saw the prequels, you know the ship.
Yeah.
It's Princess Amidala's. Queen Amidala's Naboo space fighter.
Yeah.
It's not a fighter. I guess it's just a transport.
It's got a name. I think it was like Star Cruiser or something like that. Space Cruiser.
And so he gives it to him.
But it's all like messed up and dirty.
Yeah. And so the robots are working on it. Vader uses the force to crush the robots. He goes, perhaps you like it the way it is.
Because Palpatine basically says, you know, we're having it cleaned up, so you know, so it look all nice when you're doing your stuff, and then that's when Vader just like destroys the robot for no reason.
So Palpatine then gives Vader his next mission, to which Vader says, "No." I'm like, "What? Did Vader grow a pair? What's this?" And Emperor's like, "No." It doesn't really matter what the mission is; it's not important. And he goes, I have destroyed the remaining Jedi. I'm doing my Vader impersonation. I have destroyed the remaining Jedi for you. I have performed any task that you require. But first, I would ask that you give me a world. A world? Ah, I see. A place for you to hone your skills and use your rage. He says, that makes a lot of sense. What world would you have? Do you want Tatooine? Do you want Naboo? I'll even give you my own planet. Yeah.
We know you have a lot of...
You could take out your rage and your frustration on all the inhabitants there.
Which is funny because earlier with the Inquisitors, like, he was like, yes, we're moving the Inquisitor headquarters off my world.
It's like, yeah. He was like, I'll not have any more of this. I'm moving the Inquisitors. They can't stay here anymore. But it says, what world do you want? You have Naboo. You can have Amidala in my home world. You'd have Tatooine. You can have your home world. You can take out your rage on the sand people all you want there. And he goes, no, I want Mustafar. And Mustafar, as we know, is the lava planet where Obi-Wan cut all his arms and legs off.
And Amidala
basically died. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, she died later in childbirth, but he thinks she died there. And so from
where he was born,
as from Vader. Anakin's point of view, this is where Vader was born.
Yeah.
Yeah. And this is his, that now is his home world. And for those of you that keep up with, you know, the EC, extended universe stuff for Star Wars, everybody knows that that's where Vader's castle was, Vader's fortress was on Mustafar.
Yeah, we saw it in Rogue One.
Right. So,
well, this is a cool book because it's just like, not only like they're just like drawing a lot of like Anakin like memories and stuff. Mm-hmm. Like I said, with that annual where they went to Tatooine and he was remembering killing all the sand people.
Right. And remembering the battle in the arena and stuff like that. Yeah.
And like I said, we're still at the point where like Vader's like, he still doesn't trust the Emperor completely because he knows the Emperor's like doing stuff behind his back and he just wants full.
See, if you watch the Star Wars movies and you don't get things like this to fill in the gaps, you almost get to feel like Anakin died and they used his body and made Vader out of him. And so the Vader is just a shell and Anakin's not really there anymore. It's almost like it feels that way. It's not that way, but it's almost like it feels that way. But kind of like RoboCop, which we were watching earlier tonight.
Not the movie, but like stuff on YouTube.
Right. He's still in there.
Yeah.
And
he has thoughts.
He has thoughts and feelings.
But he doesn't express them.
Right.
He just it's the rage. Thing that, like, I guess that makes him stronger or whatever because his Sith abilities, you know,
are just tied to that. Yeah.
So he keeps it to himself and it just makes him angrier and angrier. Because, like I said, the issue before this one where he was killing the priest and his family, that's a pretty good issue, too.
Yeah. Yeah, it was. So this is a really good book because it's tying Anakin's life to Vader's life and showing you where they two meet.
Yeah.
And that's really, really important for the character to understand who he is, I think. So, because it felt like we had Anakin, then we had Vader. It's almost like he completely changed, kind of like the way the Doctor regenerates. He's almost a different person. That's not the case. This is just a man in a shell.
Yeah.
And so it's good. All right. That brings us to the end of this week's books. We'll be back in just a moment to close the show out. Alden and Rowdy, the best comic book podcast on the internet. Sit tight.
You ready, Bulls?
No. Signed aboard this ship to practice medicine, not to have my atoms scattered back and forth across space by this gadget.
Thank you for listening to Alden and Rowdy, the comic book podcast. We want to just touch base with you now and tell you a couple things about us. If you're still listening, we appreciate that. This is the part of the show that nobody likes, but we kind of need to do it. We want you to go over to our website, you don't have to put the W's on. I just say that out of habit. arnetcast.podomatic.com is where you can check out our show and see a bunch of previous episodes, or you can subscribe to the show in your podcatcher, whether that be iTunes or whether that be some other independent third-party app you have on your phone or your computer. Stitcher, whatever you want to use. You have to have our RSS feed to use a podcatcher. There's a link onto that on the website. You can head over there and click that. If you subscribe to the show on iTunes, do us a favor and go over to the iTunes store and write a review for Alternate Reality. That would be super cool, and it would help us gain visibility and help more people be aware of the show. That's good for us and ultimately good for you, so we want you to do that. Please send us some email. Like I said earlier, especially in upcoming 400th episode, which will be out soon. We're talking 3 episodes from now. Send us some email at aldenorealitypodcast@gmail.com and let us know how you enjoyed the show. Did you like it? Did you not like it? Did you disagree with us? Did you agree with us? And if so, why? And did we leave anything out? Did we forget anything? I got something the other day on Facebook. From Ed Moore, who was telling us that we had messed up on something, and I can't remember now what it was. And I think Chris was fussing at me about the fact that we forgot Abin Sur's name. And so I was like, yes, I know. We just temporarily had a mental block. Forgive us. But Ed Moore was talking about Fantastic Four and the fact that they didn't die.
Yeah, they didn't die at the end of Secret Wars. They just disappeared.
Yeah. So thank you. Please keep us in check when we when we get something wrong. We're only human. When we get something wrong, and we omit a fact or state something incorrectly, call our hand on it. We appreciate that. Keep us honest. Go over, join us on the social media, twitter.com/AR_podcast for the show, or you can follow me and Charlie individually at John Loveless for me, at X Onslaught for Charlie. And you can catch us on the Facebook. We're very public there. You should be able to just search John Loveless or Charlie Huffman and find us. There's also a Facebook page for Alternate Reality where we post new episodes and get listener feedback, like we just mentioned. So please do that. We welcome that and appreciate that. Alternate Reality is a proud member of the Comics Podcast Network. Comics Podcast Network is a cool place where a bunch of other shows post their stuff, and it's all kind of a community where you can check out our show as well as a bunch of other really cool shows that are part of the network. So to check that out, go over to comicspodcast.com. That's comics with an S, podcast with an S, double plural, comicspodcast.com to check out the network. Again, can't stress enough, episode 400 coming up. Send us your emails. Record something if you want to and email us a WAV file of you saying something to us. That would be cool. We'll play that on the air. We would love to do that. We'll have a really good time with that. Try to make it special, and because after 400, we're quitting again. So, no, I'm kidding. So, in the meantime, and until next time, my name is John.
I'm Charlie.
And we are at... I forgot to ask you, anything to add to that?
No.
Okay, because sometimes you give me presents at the end of shows. All right.
Is that what you're expecting
every week? Well, I hope so, every week. All right, that's it. See you next time. Bye-bye.
I'm only human, a flesh and blood, a man.